Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
And welcome along to episode 2 of the Keen Odyssey 2.
Welcome, members of the Iron Filings Society.
Society who have subscribed. And if you're listening to this in November, you've just had it released. It's free to air.
It's old and grubby now.
All the catchphrases and that are just old hat.
Yeah.
And basically, you're a fucking skinflint, and we want nothing to do with you.
You've waited for the book to come to your local library. It's the equivalent of that. You've gone down like a year after it's come out. It's in the library. It's got a tatty old plastic cover on it. It smells of farts.
Yeah. It's like, and rather than watch it at the cinema, you've waited it to come on Channel 5 late at night.
Yeah.
And everyone's stopped talking about
it's
it
covered
now.
It's covered in grub and germs.
Smells of farts.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's you.
Yeah. You probably smell of farts the way you're living your life. Why don't you take a look at yourself? Take a fucking look at yourself.
Three quid a month. It's nothing.
Right.
Okay.
So Roy's been rejected. A trial hasn't worked out for him at Brighton.
Yeah.
He feels like his football career is not going to take off.
Yeah. So he failed his exam at school. He's in a bit of a no man's land. He says, gutted, I slipped into a kind of half-life.
Wow.
Fucking hell. Again, that's Dunphy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was just fucking sick of everything all the time. I couldn't be bothered to go out. I couldn't be bothered to stay in. I didn't know what to do.
I couldn't get out of bed in the morning sometimes. Would you say you might have been depressed? No, I fucking wasn't depressed. Don't be ridiculous.
Take that back, you cunt.
Don't be stupid. Did you feel sad? No, I've never felt sad in my life. Sadness is for the weak. I felt confused, yes. Frustrated, yes. Angry, but never sad, never depressed.
I'll tell you what, Roy. I'll put down half-life and I might change it later on. I don't know what that means, but whatever.
Just make sure you don't say I was sad, because I wasn't.
I slipped into a kind of half-life, drifting aimlessly through long, dull days. I got out of bed at 1 o'clock for the day's first treat, the latest episode of Neighbours.
Wow.
Which was screened at 1:30.
Yep, I
remember
that.
Again, a little bit
well.
More information than we needed. Bit of padding there from Dunphy.
Well, should we just quickly try to pinpoint what kind of year this likely was? Mid-80s.
He was born 71. This was about when he was 14 or 15, so we're looking at 86.
86. So Neighbours was still in its infancy.
So, yeah, it kind of started about 84, 85. So I think this is probably before Plain Jane, Superbrain came along.
But it might have been, I think Kylie might have been in it.
Yeah. There's a reference to Kylie later on, so yeah.
So Kylie and Jason were in it, probably Mike.
Yeah. What was that ginger fella called?
Mike out of Memento. Oh, yeah.
Clive. He was in it as well.
Clive the cunt. Daphne.
Daphne.
And
she was shacked up with Dez. That was implausible.
He was a fucking loser.
She could have done better than him.
Don't know, because she died, remember? And then I think he had to raise their kid on his own.
Did he?
I think she might have died during childbirth.
Yeah, I think she might have done.
I think she might have died during childbirth. And he was. Anyway, this was the sort of shit that Roy was having to cope with. Have you seen this? Ma'am, have you seen this stuff that's going on down in Australia? It's disgusting. The poor bastard. I don't know how. I'm feeling upset for him, for old Des. His wife's died. The baby's got no mammy.
I wonder if he's an Irish fella. It's quite an Irish name. He doesn't have the accent, though.
What's he doing down there in the first place?
Must
going
have been
all the
criminal.
Way to Australia. Must have done something wrong.
I'll never do nothing wrong, Mammy. I tell you that. That's a vow.
I tell you what. I feel peculiar when that Charlene comes on the screen now. Have you seen her?
She's a lady, but she's dressed like a little fella.
They let her work on the cars. Down in the mechanics place. It makes no sense.
Can we get a car? I know we've got a no car rule in the family.
If I had a car, I'd drive it all the way to Australia and I'd go up Ramsey Street and I'd ask that Charlene to fix it for me. It'd be grand.
Which road do I need to go on to get to Australia? End of the street, and then I guess it'd be take a right.
Take a right. I think that's down.
And then 5 hours, then you're in Australia.
Excuse me. Do you know the way to Ramsey Street? Neighbours. Everybody needs good fucking neighbours.
So after he'd watched Neighbours, he'd walk his dog Ben, a black mongrel who had replaced Lucky, another mongrel, so-called because he was a stray, who we figured was lucky to find Arcane. Described himself as Arcane here. Mm. I thought it said R. Kelly at first. Okay,
coming up
worse.
Now, best line of the book so far.
Would you like to deliver it, Sam?
I loved my dogs, really adored them, and still do to this day. Unlike people, dogs don't talk shite.
Yeah. He's right as well.
Right, write this down. Is your pencil sharpened? We'll fucking sharpen it then. Because you want it sharp for this
bit. This is staying in. None of your fucking changes.
Don't put your flourishes in. This is how it goes. Dogs don't talk shite. And actually, come to think of it, we should maybe make that the title of this book.
Even them films that Disney put out with the talking dogs in, the dogs in them films are generally quite clever and insightful, yeah. I find.
And they won't bullshit you. They won't lie. Even if they're not smart, they're not going to lie and they're not going to talk shite about themselves, making all the grand claims.
False promises. And he goes on, they won't betray you or otherwise let you down. It's like a lyric, this. What you give, you get back and more.
This isn't true. As you're a current dog owner, I've been a dog owner in the past. And I love dogs.
Yeah, I do as well.
But
just not
what
that,
he's
not
saying
that
is,
much the one I've got at the minute.
What he's saying is just evident. It's just not true.
No. If you want to go on holiday, you've got to try and find someone to look after them. Yeah. It's a pain in the arse.
They do let you down on a daily basis.
Like, I woke up this morning, mine had pissed on the kitchen floor. Because he wouldn't go out for a piss last night.
And did you feel let down?
I felt really let down.
Did you feel almost betrayed?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. It betrayed you. Also, what you give, you get back. No.
Nope.
You take your dog for walks and you feed it.
Yeah.
Your dog does fuck all for you.
Yeah.
Really?
If anything, it makes me feel uncomfortable by sitting too close to me on the sofa.
So, dogs are lovable, but not for any of the reasons Roy Keane claims.
Yeah. They each have a character that's distinct to them. That's true. That's
true.
Kind of a get out. So, he just obviously hasn't had a dog that's been annoying. For me, the most magical of all their... fucking hell.
This is amazing.
goes on a diatribe about dogs. For me, the most magical of all their traits is that your dog won't know or care if you're the captain of Manchester United.
I wouldn't have a fucking clue.
Or an unemployed, uneducated 16-year-old wannabe pro footballer.
My dog never knew. And at times, I'll admit, it did annoy me that the dog didn't know I was captain of Manchester United, because it meant a lot to me that I was. It was a huge achievement and the dog didn't seem to give a fuck. I treated me with the respect I deserved.
I'd often tell him about my triumphs on the football field, but he just didn't seem to pay attention.
Jigs.
He never brought them up in conversation at a later date.
Jigs, did you see me on the TV last night? I scored 2 goals against Juventus. I got us into the fucking final of the Champions League.
Got a second yellow though. I'm not going to play in the fucking final.
What kind of a fucking answer is that? Do you know what you are, Triggs? You're fucking jealous. And it's embarrassing to watch. You're fucking jealous of me because you never kicked a ball in your life.
You English cunt. Walking Ben was the best part of my day. I still loved my football and trained and played with the same enthusiasm, despite sensing that an important opportunity had last. Maybe the last I'd get. I never drew the dole for the simple reason you had to be 18 to qualify. So he's never took any handouts from anyone. Mm. Well, apart from his family, which he says here. Dennis and Johnson would also sub me from time to time. Money was a problem. My father and mother and father didn't have much, yet they never really saw me short. I took the odd labouring job when one could be found. The easiest of these was in Galvin's off-licence in Blackpool.
Mm. Must be Blackpool Island.
It's got to be Blackpool in Cork. Yeah, Blackpool in Cork. You should have mentioned that in the book, though. You think Dunphy would have put that in and squeezed a few more words out of the word count, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad work, Dunphy. So According to a story I read somewhere, he took this job to build my muscles by lugging barrels of beer from the stockroom to the shop. The truth is I took the job for the money. £3.50 an hour. And I spent most of my time stealing Galvin's chocolate to stuff my face. It was just before Christmas. The money was handy. I lasted 3 weeks.
Three fucking weeks I lasted there. Stuffing my face with fucking galaxies and marathon bars.
Sitting on one of the so-called barrels, I was being paid to lump around. Sitting on them, stuffing chocolate into my face.
Galvin used to come in. He'd say to me, Roy, what are you doing sat in that bar? You should be lifting it. Stop stealing my chocolate. Fuck off, Galvin. Stick it up your bollocks, you English cunt.
I thought 3 weeks was a pretty good run, to be fair.
Kind of a name's fucking Galvin anyway.
The worst job I got was for some cowboy contractor who hired a group of us to strip acid off metal plates.
Fucking hell. Really weird.
What? Uh-huh. To do this, we were given a blowtorch but no protective clothing.
Fucking hell. That's what made him the man he is.
Yeah, that's the kind of job I'd like to do. If I wasn't doing this... Podcasting. Which, let's face it, is no fucking job for a man at all, is it?
No.
Jesus Christ, look at the state of us. We spending our days doing this.
We don't do much with our hands, do we?
Fucking hell, we're an embarrassment to our gender.
We sometimes gesticulate.
Yeah, but that's about it.
You and I should be on a fucking oil rig, away from our families for months on end, living only with other dirty, sweaty men, doing physical work.
Proper work.
Dangerous work.
Yeah.
Huge waves crashing against the side of the rig as we do. I don't know what the fuck it is they do on these rigs.
Probably fucking stripping acid off metal plates.
As far as I fucking understand it, right, these oil rigs, just they work automatically.
But no, there's got to be a big handle that you turn and then the oil comes up.
What I'm saying is they don't need as many fellas on there as they've got.
You've just talked us into the job and now you're talking us out of it.
What I'm saying is I reckon it's just a big bumming club. And I got no problem with that because actually, if you're that way inclined, it's probably a right fucking laugh.
Yeah.
Go out into the middle of the ocean and just get pissed up and have it off in the middle of the sea. You got no one can get in touch with you.
There's because, fucking oil everywhere as well.
People are fucking chasing you.
You're covered in oil. Then you have to have a shower.
Yeah.
They get covered in oil again.
Imagine that. And it's like, if people are chasing you over unpaid bills or other just shit, you know, no one can get in touch with you. You're in the middle of nowhere. You're on a big fucking metal structure in the middle of the ocean.
Sign up for an offshore bumming club.
All you're doing is offshore bumming and getting pissed up. There's no old bill there.
No.
Right?
It's lawless.
It's fucking lawless. You can take as many drugs there as you want. You can do all sorts. You can take guns. You'd probably have guns, and in the evening, you'd just fire guns and fireworks into the blackness of the sea.
While bumming.
Wouldn't you? Yeah.
God.
Whilst being bummed, you'd just be like, pow! They probably do heterosexual ones. They probably cover all the sexual tastes.
Yeah, they probably have to by law. Sounds good, though. But as I was saying, though, me and you sit here gesticulating now and again and talking shit into microphones.
Yeah.
For a meagre living.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people out there stripping acid off metal plates. If I wasn't doing this, that was the original point I was going to do. If I wasn't doing this, the one thing I'd love to do would be demolition. If this podcast ever makes me a millionaire, I'm going to start a demolition company.
Demolition or podcasting. That was what I said to my careers teacher at school.
And he said, what's podcasting?
I said,
does it exist?
And I just tapped my nose. I went, you'll fucking see, pal. And then he stuck me in detention for that. Well, who's laughing now, eh? But I said to him, it's either that or demolition.
Yeah.
And he said, well, if I were you, I'd start pursuing the demolition thing because the other job hasn't been invented yet.
How far did you get with the demolition?
Not fucking nowhere. Sent off my CV to a couple of people, but no response.
Just the idea of blowing up some buildings, that really appeals to me.
Yeah, or operating a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Fucking hell. So keep subscribing to our Patreon, and one day Sam and myself will realise our dream of becoming demolitionists.
Well, we could set up a separate Patreon to just fund our... Because people start up, and we're here broadcasting today. We're recording this in the heart of the British tech industry.
Yeah, Old Silicon Roundabout Street.
Yes,
isn't it?
And it's riddled with people doing startups. Going to any coffee shop, there's all sorts of cunts sat around doing their startups.
The majority of startups are pretty poncy that they do.
Not ours.
Not demolition,
because it's demolition startup. That's what we're calling Sam and Andy's demolition startup. Do you want to get involved in a wonderful new business venture?
We have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for you.
Hello. We should hire George Weyer to be our salesman.
He'll be the front new man. Business. We'll be the silent partners.
This is George Weyer, former African Footballer of the Year. I have a wonderful opportunity for you. Would you like to invest? We could send him on Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Peter Jones, I have a wonderful opportunity for you. Are you familiar with the podcast Top Flight Time Machine?
Do you have a pen? Write this down.
The two fellas behind the podcast are going into the demolition business. Duncan Bannatyne. I don't know. Sure, I like the podcast, but will that translate into being capable at destroying buildings?
Those fellas have got a neat turn of phrase. But do they have the organisational capabilities required to put explosives all over a building and bring it down in one go? I suspect not.
And why aren't they here? Why have they sent former African Footballer of the Year George Weah to do their talking for them?
I have no answer to that. Do you have any other questions?
Please give me your banking details.
Jalapeño.
So he's stripping acid off metal plates with a blowtorch and no protective clothing. Can I just say we are about 17 minutes into this episode and we ended the last one on page 11. We are now in the top half of page 12.
Well, look, we can skip past quite a lot of this.
No. Okay, let's give it all the due diligence that it requires.
All right.
So anyway, back to unemployed Roy, or semi-employed Roy. It was dangerous work, but paid money in hand, £50 a week. I stuck it for 3 months. So he was at Galvin's for 3 weeks, and then stripping acid for 3 months.
Yeah.
Then in the spring, I went potato picking. Bit of a cliche, but yeah, never mind. Cycling about 15 miles there and back. This was a killer, back-breaking work. The legacy being a bad back that still bothers me today.
Fucking hell, from potato. Hell.
Yeah.
You'd think that was a wind-up if you said to Roy Keane, he goes, oh, I've got a terrible bad back. I've had it my whole life. Where'd you get it from? Potato picking.
Hello, this is George Weah. Have you suffered from a bad back? Picked up while picking potatoes as a young man. Maybe you could make a claim. Do you have a pen?
Call 0800 George Weah back claims. I might get that a call. Come to think of it, because the money would come in handy.
Jalapeño.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Jalapeño.
He then lists rejection letters for clubs where he's written for trials. And he's obviously kept them all to this day, which is, that's a good thing, I think. It's the kind of thing that certain men would do, and instead of just dismissing them and moving on. But no, he's kept them all, and he's written them all out in this book, or rather, Dunphy's. Right, have you got any letters of rejection that you got from football clubs? I reckon there could be a good 600 words in that. So we could just drop into this thing.
What do you mean letters of rejection? When they told me, when they fucked me off? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not oh, really. Okay. I mean, I've got a wee shoebox. There's a 10, 20, about 400, 500 letters. That not just from rejections from football clubs, but people who have upset me, said nasty things about me, doubted me. over the years. I've got a big file on all of them.
I call it my shitty box.
It's buried there in the garden, next to Triggs.
It's not really a box. It's more of a storage unit. So there's letters from Derby County, letters from Sheffield Wednesday, Aston Villa, Chelsea. Chelsea say, "I'm sorry to disappoint you, but would like to say that we do, along with most of the clubs, in other words, stop bothering us, have a large number of scouts watching games of all ages. And if you are good enough to become a professional footballer, you do have every chance of being, in inverted commas, spotted."
Bollocks. Typical fucking Chelsea, yeah. That is. So, mate, I didn't know, and I suppose it's not the case anymore, because I think nowadays people, you know, scouting works differently, but I didn't realise that there would have been a time where, as a kid, an aspirant footballer, you literally just wrote on spec to famous professional clubs.
Yeah.
"Dear Real Madrid, my name is Sam Delaney. I am a semi-regular substitute for the West London League under-12s, St George's. I have managed to get on the pitch 4 to 5 times this season and practically every time embarrassed myself badly. Nevertheless, I put this down to the inadequacy of the pitches and about at one time I had to play in normal trainers, not boots, and the lack of studs just made me slip around like a cunt, to put it in the words of my own manager. To play on your quality pitches out there in Madrid would be a great privilege. Please give me a chance."
I imagine I would thrive in the right facilities.
Exactly.
Under the beautiful Spanish sunshine. But I mean, we get lots of letters from people wanting us to start podcasts with us, don't we? And wanting to join in and get trials. And we throw them all in the bin.
All of them.
Because
don't even open
them.
Because
you're not going to be as good as us, so why bother trying?
No point. Listen, if you're good enough, which you're not, but if you are,
which you're not,
you'll be spotted by our scouts. Yeah, Andy and I have scouts all over the country.
Network.
Sitting in pubs over trying to listen in on other blokes' conversations.
Yeah.
Trying to hear if you've got quality banter.
If there's a group of 2 or 3 white men sitting together, preferably middle class, we will home in on them, listen for a bit, and if there's anything there, you'll get picked up.
Then don't worry, you will get the tap on the shoulder. It's like the the intelligence services do to undergraduates at Cambridge University.
Yeah.
You'll get a tap on the shoulder, someone will whisper in your ear a code that might be cunter or something like that.
You recognise it when it comes.
Don't punch them, just follow them. And then you'll be a podcast.
And we'll put you on a fast track program where you will then do a series of podcasts where you interview other white middle class men about fuck all,
about like their favourite album,
or their favourite vegetable, and that sort of thing. And glory will not be far away.
Yeah. This is it.
Oh, this is a very evocative sentence. "In those not too distant days when I'd lounged in bed till lunchtime, rising only for my daily episode of Neighbours." And when he says rising, I think we know what he means.
Yeah, we all remember that. We've all had a period like that in our lives. If you were a young man in the 80s or 90s, then you did rise just for Neighbours, sometimes twice a day, watching the repeat at 5:30.
Exactly. He said, "I'd experienced the alternative to hard graft. I'd nearly slipped under." Fucking hell, clang. "I'd nearly slipped under." Under what, though? And to where?
What do you mean here, Eamon, where you've written that I nearly slipped under? Well, I'm just saying that the way you explained it to me, you sounded like you might have been on the edge of some kind of episode. Episode of what?
The only episodes I'm interested in is episodes of Neighbours.
Maybe Fawlty Towers once in a while, but that's it.
I don't really understand this. Maybe I'll grow into it. I'm not sure. And by this time, he'd signed for Cove Ramblers, which were the team, which the first professional team he played for. And he says that he had, he'd grown in height and strength. "I was no longer the little guy. In the course of a few short months, I'd grown from boy to man. Mentally, I had always had an edge. That was never in doubt." That was never in doubt. Mentally, up here, I always had it.
"No, ask me, ma'am. Ask anyone who knew me. I had mental strength."
I wonder if there's a little bit of short man syndrome at the heart of all this. Yeah.
Well, he repeatedly mentions it.
5'6" and a half.
Like, there's a thing where he says, you know, I don't know if he said it yet, but he says, you know, playing with older lads, bigger lads. He went, "They were bigger than me, but my studs were the same size as theirs, and some of them didn't fancy it."
I'd now the muscle to back it up. Kamikaze Man was transformed into a footballer. Dunphy, you've put Kamikaze Man here. No, that's not words I'd use myself. Oh, I'm just a little bit of a flourish there, a little bit of a literary flourish, Roy. I'm not sure about you, Dunphy.
I knew I should have gone with someone else, you know.
It's going to be Roddy Dial next time. You've been warned.
I would have got that James Joyce to write it, you know. But apparently he's unavailable. So I'm stuck with you here. With your fucking kamikaze. You're writing it in fucking Chinese.
And then he talks about a very, very significant match, which is 18th of February 1990. You can tell it's significant because he's put the date in the book. Against Belvedere Boys, a top Dublin club. And they draw 1-1 in the first game. And they were away for the replay. Everything went wrong from the start.
Mm.
The bus was late picking us up in Cove. The traffic was heavy. Most of the journey was spent looking anxiously at clocks and watches. Would we make it by kickoff time? We got to Fairview Park, an open windswept public park with only minutes to spare. We were knackered, beaten before we began. Belvedere hammered us 4-0. It was a fucking cock-up. Mickey fucking Mouse, typical Cork, leaving the big boys from Dublin with a handy task, which they accomplished in typically arrogant style. If I played like a demented man that day, it's because I was one. Fucking hell. Belvedere were big time and there was a large crowd to watch them. I played for myself. Even when I knew the game was lost, I kept going. I'd show those Dublin bastards that I could fucking play. Some days you can feel an appreciative vibe, even of a hostile crowd. You can earn respect, however grudging. So the gut-aching feeling of failure, the same old story for us in Dublin, became just another pain barrier to push through. I was like a man possessed. I was like Basil Fawlty. Fawlty Towers. By the strange compound of anger, frustration and personal pride. Afterwards, we went across the road to a pub for a glass of orange, a St. Clement's even, and a sandwich. John O'Rourke, the Ramblers vice chairman, came and sat beside me. Roy, there was a scout from Nottingham Forest over there. He said they'd like you to go over for a trial.
Dun, bam, dun, bam, dun.
He says, my heart didn't leap. Where's the scout was my immediate reaction.
Where's the fucking scout?
Bring him
you
in.
You say there's a scout here. Let's fucking see the whites in his eyes. You're making things up again.
That's basically what he says in the book. If he was that impressed, why wasn't he here himself?
Where the fuck's he gone?
Show yourself, you cunt. Welcome to hell, I thought. He said they'll be in touch, John continued. He was merely conveying a message until I heard it from the real
I'm
McCoy.
I'm just a messenger. Why are you getting so angry with me? I thought you'd be happy. Well, I'm not fucking happy. Get out of my sight. Stop talking.
Get down to train station and bring that scout back. I want to have a look at him. Until I heard it from the real McCoy, I wasn't going to get excited. A few weeks elapsed before I got a phone call from Cove asking me if I'd meet the Forest scout, Noel McCabe. Noel McCabe, he calls himself. And he met him in a hotel. I liked him as soon as we started chatting. He's offering me a trial, not a contract, which isn't in his gift. He says, but you're a Forest-type player. You can pass the ball, simply work the boxes and score goals. You'll be all right with Brian Clough, Noel assures me. He strikes me as a genuine man.
Have you noticed how he slips into the present tense at this point?
Yeah.
From the past tense, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
He like, suddenly takes us into a scene where it's happening there
fault?
And then. Is Dunphy,
the editor's fault.
Is Dunphy's fucked up?
Yeah.
Or Keane has sort of transported himself while he's delivering this to. Because, you know, the way it works is Dunphy would have been sat with a tape recorder prompting him with questions. And it might be that it's such a powerful memory for Keane that he's like, you know, when people get hypnotised and they regress and they're actually there and they start even talking in a babyish voice.
Mammy, I'm going tonight to a place called Nottingham.
Going to meet up with Noel McKay.
Noel McKay wants to meet me.
He seems like a nice man.
He says he wants to meet me in a hotel in Dublin. Should
you
I
think
go?
I should go, Mammy? Will you come with me and hold my hand, Mammy? Maybe he's going to give me a job on one of them oil rigs you tell me about.
Oh, I'd love that. Sure, I would.
I'll just edit that bit out. Maybe he's just sent to Dunphy. Dunphy, I want you to put this bit in as if it's happening now. Because it still feels real.
But why? Because it would be...
Just put
not,
it!
Not, stop with your fucking questions. Give me a headache now, Dunphy. Just do what I say. I'll tell you when we switch back to it not happening now, to it happening in the past.
I want it to be like one of them films. where there's stuff in the beginning that's like happening now, and then they go back to like The Godfather 2. Make it like that.
When I bang on a table like this, Dumphy, that means you have to start writing it like it's happening now. And then when I bang again, just once, go back to the other way of doing it. And it could happen at any point, so I want you to keep your ears fucking open. No, not to sleep, because I've seen you get yawning a couple of times.
So now he's excited.
Yeah. He arrives at Nottingham, but there's no trial match. Every day I'm there, I anticipate the match. Every day I go through a training session with Archie Gemmell, the youth team coach. Where's Brian Clough? Liam O'Kane? Ronnie Fenton? Is this it?
Where's Brian Clough? Liam O'Kane? Ronnie Fenton? I could go on. I know all the names.
Gary Birtles?
None of them are here.
Where the fuck is Gary Birtles?
Where's Peter Davenport?
After a week, I'm given a ticket home. One way. Well, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
They're not going to give me a ticket at all, are they? Fucking hell.
We want you to go home, then we want you to come straight back here again.
It's a test. we'll be in touch, they tell me. How did it go? They asked me back in Cove. It didn't, I explained. Noel McCabe is contacted. He makes a call to Forrest. There's been a cock-up. I'll be going back in April. So he does. He goes back, trains with the reserves for a couple of days, and then gets picked for the reserves. Away at Tranmere in a Midland League game. The ground at Tranmere was empty. I didn't care, he says. I'd learned the trick of creating atmosphere in my head.
Ah, like Ross Abbott.
Well, sort of. That's not what I'm thinking. But, yeah. Fucking hell.
Time to switch on the atmosphere in my brain.
The atmosphere machine. As I call my brain.
Mammy, I'm going to switch on the atmosphere machine now.
Oh, I can feel the atmosphere upon me now, Mammy. Oh, it's taken over me. Oh, I'm ready, Mammy. I'm ready to go. It's raging through my brain.
Quick, put Neighbours on. So he played. He says, I played well, passed, ran, tackled, won balls in the air that I had no right to get. They took me off after 70 minutes. I'd been there before. Yet somehow this time I could tell the vibes were good. Next day, Brian Clough tells me he's going to try and sign me. Dun, dun, dun.
Fucking hell.
Arrangements are made for negotiations with Cove Ramblers. My fear is that they'll want too much. I thought I was worth £5,000. And
they come out from Ireland, don't they? Delegation from Cove Ramblers.
Led by John Hollins, former Chelsea and England player.
Yeah, well, this is interesting because John O'Rourke and vice president of the club, John Mead, come over to do the deal with Forrest. Fine. But then it says they enlisted the assistance of former Chelsea and England player John Hollins, who was familiar with such deals. Ooh, I don't know. This sounds like a right flag to me.
Well, Brian Clough's involved. Familiar with such deals.
But this is Cove Ramblers. So John Hollins going, I hear you've got a young lad coming over to speak to Forrest. Now, you'll probably want me to be involved to broker the deal because you're just in that bunch of paddies who won't understand all the sharp manoeuvrings of us English football types. And they're going, all right then. They should have said, fuck off, John Hollins. Who the fuck do you think you are?
From an England player.
I think we know how to sell our own fucking player to Brian Clough.
So Clough appears at the negotiations and Roy says he wore an old green sweater, which we've all seen, and had his golden retriever with him. As I played with the dog, the rest talked money. Me and the dog were negotiating ourselves. We came up with a much better deal than Forrest did.
And I tell you, there was another dog that didn't talk shite, but they had no idea who I was either, which I didn't like.
Yet.
I said, don't worry, you may not have heard my name yet, boy, but you will soon.
He says, they were talking real money. 20 grand up front, another 10 grand after 10 first team games, and a further 10 grand when I played 20 games for Forrest. Another 7 grand will go to Cove when I've won 5 Irish caps. You've got a good deal, Mr. Clough, I heard John O'Rourke say. The money's not going in your own back pockets, is it? Clough barked. Mr. Clough, we've had to take a day off work to come over here. It's costing us money, John O'Rourke replied. In other words, we're trousering all of it.
Yeah, they're fucking bollocks anyway, yeah.
And then Clough says to Ronnie Fenton, OK, Ronnie, give him the money. This has been a cash deal,
OK, then, Ronnie, give him the money.
You think this has been a cash deal?
Yeah, Ronnie Fenton money produced the hold-all.
That's what's hinted at, isn't it?
Yeah. And then he says, you can call me Brian. Now let's have a drink. Turning to me and the dog, he snapped, except for you, you'll call me Mr. Clough.
I didn't know if he was talking to me or the dog.
Either way, I thought we'd better call him Mr. Clough then.
Welcome to hell, I thought.
They broke the mould when they created this guy, I thought to myself.
And he was on 250 quid a week. 50 quid of that would be rent on the house he'd be sharing with two other players. Signing on fee of $1,500 a year. To be honest, he says, I would have signed for a fraction of those terms. As it was, I felt like I'd won the pools. And there we are. We'll leave it at that point. He signed for Nottingham Forest. Things can only get better for Roy Morris Keane.
Exciting stuff.
Tune in for the next one. The
next exciting chapter mentions Kylie at quite an early stage and also is riddled with stories about him and his relationship with Brian Clough. So you've got all that to look forward to if you are a member of the Iron Violin Society. We salute you. If not, then you'll be listening to this God knows when, and go fuck yourself.
Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.